Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
So welcome back to the Azure Podcast. We're on episode 101 today. It is November 4th, 2015. My name is Kale Teeter. You'll notice that our normal host is not here, Sujit DeMello. He had some other things to take care of today, so it's again me and Evan running a show here today. And I'll just give a quick intro about myself. I work in Microsoft. I've been there about 5 years, and I'm working in the DX space as an SDE. And Evan's joining us, our esteemed colleague from the support team in Azure. And joining us on Skype today is Gaurav, and he's going to be talking about Azure Data Lake and Azure Data Factory. But before we get started in that, I wanted to take a minute to catch us up on the news. One of the
big news,
probably,
huge
news. Yeah. You want to take it? Go ahead, Evan.
So we probably get, I was just at the open source conference, All Things Open, a couple weeks ago, and I must have had 30 people ask me, hey, you guys going to support Red Hat? Going to support Red Hat? And, my answer has always been what I've always said is, I've heard rumors it runs, but, we don't officially, we can't officially support you running on it. If you do it, great, just don't call me. Well, today, and there was dual announcements both through the Scott Goo channels, on the Microsoft side, and the guy's name escapes me, the Red Hat CEO, that's on their side, but we've signed a partnership, and now you can, you'll be able to run Red Hat, fully supported distributions within Azure, and then on top of that, and this part I didn't know was coming, I'd heard the other part was happening, but was that we're going to invest in getting .NET working on Red Hat Linux, which I thought was pretty cool on top of that.
That's awesome.
But that's massive, right? I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but a significant chunk of enterprise Linux workloads are running Red Hat. And for those customers, that group of customers, to be able to take advantage of all that plus the Azure platform is going to be big.
Yeah, I think this is like groundbreaking news. It's huge. So
I've
heard many times just myself this question about whether we can support or run Red Hat up there. So this is awesome.
Yep. And the internet is buzzing about this today, so you'll find a lot of people tweeting about this. The community is really happy about it.
That's great. We talked about it on this show before. There's a significant difference, especially in my job, right? Kale, those of you guys on the consulting and DX side of the world, you get to be a little bit more loose with your terms. But there's a huge difference between something being fully supported on the Azure platform, which means if something breaks, I have the ability to engage the engineering team, we can request hot fixes, we can do whatever we need to do, versus, hey, it runs. Right? And Red Hat's always kind of been that secondary category. From everything I've heard, it runs. But now to be able to actually say, hey, we have channels, and I haven't seen the details on exactly how our relationship with Red Hat's going to work, but I got to think at the end of the day, Red Hat's going to basically say, hey, if you have a problem on Azure, call Microsoft, call Red Hat at the same time. All three of us get on the phone, and we'll figure it out, right? Which we could not do that previously.
Yeah, awesome. Big news. Yeah, and another one here that's kind of close to things I work on. The DocumentDB is now available in another region, South Central U.S., and that brings it to a count of 12 now. So that's expanding pretty good, and good to have that service out there. Evan, a couple things on the SQL side I saw this week. The Elastic database transactions with Azure SQL Database.
I saw that. I was trying to get my head wrapped around, how that's actually going to work. I'm going to have to reach out to, we had Thomas Talius on here a couple weeks back from the Azure SQL team. But, distributed transactions in Azure SQL has been a pain point for forever. So the ability to do distributed transactions, and it looks like you can even coordinate it through MSDTC on premises. Now that's kind of a blast for the past, but man, the ability to really, this turns SQL Azure into this hybrid solution as well as just this really cool service.
Yeah, it's huge. Again, I've heard this asked myself before from people asking, can we support this kind of distributed transaction in Azure if we spread that across there? And the answer was we didn't have something out of the box there to do that to begin with there. So yep. I think this is awesome.
Yeah, no, I think the big thing is going to be that and I just lost my train of thought here, but it's Well, okay. There was something really cool about that I was going to say, and now I can't remember.
No, I'm thinking the one thing that's kind of probably be slightly different, and it's kind of the same mantra of a PaaS or a platform-type SQL database is the way you monitor this kind of transaction status. So my guess is, and that's what I'm thinking, is it's going to be through the DMVs to be able to do that kind of stuff, because it seems like that's kind of the model for those things when we push them up in there to PaaS.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me in the least. Right?
I think the thing with SQL Server this week was the dynamic data masking is now GA. So that's a great thing, for especially from a security standpoint, if we have people out there implementing that and need to be able to do that.
So just for our audience, because this is something that SQL Server on-premises has done. I'm sorry, Azure SQL Database has done for a while, but I don't know that a lot of people use it. I think we might have talked about it briefly a long ways back, but just for our audience's edification, I mean, this is where you can have two endpoints into your Azure SQL Database. One of your endpoints is the data is fully exposed, and that's the direction where your developers have to go through because they need to actually see the data. But then you have the other endpoint where specific fields are masked, and maybe that's where your application is going to come through. Oh, I'm sorry, I flipped that around. Somebody who has to see the full data is coming through the one endpoint, and then your application, which may only ever surface portions of the data, is coming through the other endpoint where some of the fields are actually masked out at that point, based on the form. And super, super powerful to have these dual endpoints into the same data source.
Yeah, and it kind of rides along with the encryption features, to make this thing really something that enterprises and people concerned about, really high security things up there in Azure. I mean, these are just great tools to enable that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two other small ones. One is just a reach out and a shout out to guys in our group, but basically on the MVAs, there's a security for cloud-enabled world. So I think it's like 7 different modules up there, if I remember right, 7 or 8 different modules. It goes through a lot of the operationalization, the security strategy, administrative control, data security, all these different things around security in Azure. So it's a great session if you have time to listen to it. It's free. It's up there on the web. In the MBA course. And then the last one was from our open source side of the world, the general availability of Cloud Foundry. And there's some preview access for the Pivotal Cloud Foundry product that's out there in Azure. And so, if you guys are looking at that, I think we had talked about that on a podcast in the past, but the thing's GA now, and the Pivotal one is in preview.
Yeah, remember back in the day, Kale, when we not only just remembered all the things we talked about on the podcast, but like we probably remember what we said about them.
Yeah.
After 101, it's starting to get tough to remember all the way back.
Yeah, and I mentioned this to G today. I said, hey, I reached out to Gaurav to come on. We didn't have him on before, did we?
No.
But and that kind of lays kind of a good segue over to our guest. I'll go ahead and turn it over to him. He can introduce himself and let's talk about some data services in Azure.
Sure. So, folks, just for introduction, I am Gaurav Malhotra. I'm a program manager in the Cortana Analytics team here at Microsoft. I have had 10 years plus of experience in shaping scalable, distributed big data services on the cloud. I joined Microsoft in 2010, and prior to that, I was doing a lot of technical consulting, and my first project here at Microsoft was shipping SQL reporting on the cloud. The service doesn't exist anymore, but I really had fun learning cloud concepts then.
I didn't know that, Gaurav. Yes. I mean, I was the lead EE on that for a long time.
Yes.
So you were working with the developers. All the devs were based out of Israel.
Yes. So earlier that project started here in Redmond, and we basically took the SQL Server reporting engine and cloudified it. We released it, and then the entire project moved to Israel.
Okay. Yeah, I was then, that was probably about when we came in at that point. I was so, you know, I mean, I understand why that product went the direction it did, but that was the second cloud service I'd ever supported after Azure SQL Database. And I really kind of was sad to see it go. What was it? Last fall we turned it off for good.
Yes. Yeah. Last fall.
Yeah. I was kind of sad to see it go. I mean, that is the reality in the cloud world. Sometimes things don't make it for various reasons.
Yep.
But yeah, it was still kind of sad to see. So I did not know that.
Yep. So just continuing my introduction, so I've had helped a lot of Fortune 500 companies in different domains unlock the power of big data in last couple of years. So recently, I've been working on releasing a geo-distributed scalable service named Azure Data Factory on the cloud. We announced the GA early this year. So I've been working on that, helping customers and onboard onto it, making them successful on our platform.
That's awesome. And just to recap again, and to Evan's point, we did talk about Azure Data Factory in the past, but maybe just give a quick refresher. Is this something similar to like SSIS, like these ETL type tools, or is it differ in some way?
Sure. So Azure Data Factory, for starters, if I were to put in a few sentences, it's a geo-distributed scalable ETL service that allows customers to build, operationalize, and monitor big data workflows. So with Data Factory, we have four main value props, and I would like to use the analogy of a manufacturing industry to explain those. So essentially, just like in a manufacturing industry, you have raw materials, you acquire those raw materials, then you have machines transforming those raw materials into finished goods, and then you deliver those. So if I were to relate all of these terms to Data Factory, so these raw materials are sources of data. So the first value prop that Data Factory provides is that it allows you to ingest data from different data stores, and you can egress data as well. So when I say data stores, we support a bunch of on-premise and cloud data stores, like on-premise Oracle server, SQL's on-premise server. We support DB2, Teradata, Sybase, and we've been on an aggressive journey to add new connectors every month. And in addition to on-prem sources, we do support a lot of cloud sources as well, like Azure SQL Database, Azure Table, Azure Blob Storage. So the first value prop is that you can ingest data, draw data from these data stores, and build a data lake. So our newest addition to this is Azure Data Lake Store, and you can bring data from your sources to Azure Data Lake Store using our connector. The second value prop, and that relates to the part where you transform your raw materials into finished goods, is we allow you to transform and analyze your data. And in order to do that, we support a bunch of processing environments. So you could run a Hive activity, a Pig activity, a MapReduce activity on an HD Insight cluster. You could run a custom .NET activity. So you can come and write any code and execute it on a HD Insight cluster or an Azure batch environment. We also support machine learning activity, so you could be doing some predictive analysis with it. And again, the newest addition here that we have is the USQL activity, where you could bring your data and run processing by running USQL scripts on Azure Data Lake Analytics service. So the third value prop that we provide is that once you have transformed and analyzed the data, you actually deliver the data and publish the data. So this entire pipeline that I talked about, from ingesting to transforming to publishing, you can orchestrate and operationalize using Data Factory. So you could build and manage a network of data pipelines using Data Factory. The last and by no means the least value prop that we provide is that you could monitor and manage this from a single pane of glass. So what we are trying to do here is that we are trying to be the system center for data integrators. So just like system center allows you to monitor and manage hybrid assets across different environments, we want to provide those same capabilities with Data Factory. So, yeah.
I was going to say, that's really neat. Now, is this, I mean, and maybe you're going to get to this, but I mean, this sounds, when you describe it, sounds all, I hear BizTalk type terms and terminology in what you're describing.
Yes, but here what we are basically focused on right now, our first release is on time series data flows. We are evolving this to reference data and all that other stuff as well. But here you could create complex pipelines with time dependencies where you can say that my input is produced every hour and the output is produced once in a day. So you could do complex dependencies, time-based dependencies using Data Factory.
That's neat.
Yeah, I got a couple questions. One thing you mentioned there, kind of as you were going through that, was this notion that we could have custom activities, right? So there's like canned ones that are built into the system, right? You can declaratively kind of define up there to do these different activities up there. But the custom.net one, how does that work? Do you like compile a DLL, and how does that actually work?
So essentially what we do here is that you just go instantiate a .NET class project, you just extend our classes, and then you write any code that you want to execute in a .NET environment. And we take that code, run inside a VM, and now that VM could be an HD Insight cluster, or that VM could be a VM that you have used in your Azure Batch environment. So with Azure Batch, you get the flexibility that you can scale up, scale down automatically based on the scale formula. So we execute any code that you write in that .NET wrapper on those clusters.
Man, you guys are brave running any code.
I know.
As a support person, I always think about the scenario. What if somebody did fill in the blank, and then I hear a PM say, "Well, we'll run any code somebody gives us." I just think, oh. No, who knows what they're going to do at that point. I'm running my mail server out of ADF.
Yes, so yesterday I just got a ping, a guy who's trying to pull data from a Salesforce API, and he has written a custom .NET activity for that. We have one of our biggest customer who is actually writing a Spark at like how to submit Spark jobs using Spark Submit in a .NET activity in ADF, because we are still working towards supporting Spark as a first-class citizen in ADF. So with this, customers have whatever they wanted to do, they can do with this .NET activity.
Wow, that's pretty powerful, because, I mean, that's really where you give somebody the framework, and then they can really do whatever they want on top of that canvas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I know some of the feedback I had heard earlier, just to get back to you on the Azure Data Factory, was, you know, when you come into this tooling, it's pretty awesome because you can build essentially mostly all of this in a browser. And when you do that, it's very, you know, declarative and that kind of thing. There's a lot of JSON involved. And some of the feedback I'd heard originally, like from people, was like, man, is there any like better templates or like a GUI or something that I can use to do this? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, a couple months back when 2015 came out, we have some templates now in Visual Studio for this stuff, right?
Yes, so we have a Visual Studio integration. The Visual Studio has templates. So you can instantiate a Data Factory project. There are templates in there for data movement. There are templates in there for Hive activity, for using a pig activity. And even with our UX, we have a lightweight editor now in our UX. So you could go to that lightweight editor, and we have templates for pipelines, for data sets, for creating link services, and you can use them and just fill in the values and create your data factories and pipelines inside it.
Man, so you can even, so that says you can even do a, I mean, I love the services I see that put out these lightweight UIs, because, you know, a lot of times, I mean, I'll find myself, you know, I've been in the server space for a long time now, I'll find myself trying to do something in a service like used to see like Azure SQL Database. See, my old-time roots are coming out. But Azure SQL Database, and I didn't have Management Studio on the machine that I happened to be sitting in front of my wife's laptop or something like that. And so I couldn't do what I needed to do because I didn't have the design time or the design time environment. So you guys adding this as just part of the UI, now again, lightweight, but is huge, right? Because it really opens it up to somebody who maybe doesn't have Visual Studio or doesn't have it available at the very minute they need to do something.
Absolutely. So one of the top post feedback that we received from our customers was that data developers who are actually developing these workflows when they deploy it in production or they're deploying it in their test environments, if they want to do minor edits, they don't want to go to PowerShell or they don't want to go to C# SDK that we have. They want to edit it right there from the UI where they are looking at it. So this right. capability allows them to do those edits, to do those rerunning of their pipelines there from the editor.
So I gotta ask, just because I'm curious, if I try and do this on my phone, will it work? I mean, it's full, and like it's not Silverlight. Silverlight's kind of gone, so this should all be HTML5. So I should be able to do this stuff from my phone.
Yes. So right now it's live in portal.azure.com. So I believe portal.azure.com works on the phone, yeah. So this should work there as well.
Man, that's pretty powerful. I'm sitting at my son's basketball game, and somebody pings me about something wrong with my job, and I can go out, go fix it, publish it, done, and don't even have to leave my phone. That's amazing.
And one of the biggest thing that we have here is that we have this support for alerts. So if there are any failures or if there are any other events that you might be interested in, so you could go and create alerts on those events and you will be notified by email. So this is very powerful for a DevOps person who is on DevOps duty for that particular week. And like you said, you're watching a basketball game and you get an alert email saying that this particular pipeline in production has failed. So you just go log in, see the error. If you know what the fix is, you apply the fix, you run that again, and boom, it's done.
Yeah, that's amazingly powerful.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to touch base too on this data lake, the data lake store. I know we've talked a little bit about it in the past, but maybe you could give us a good definition for what actually is a data lake. I'll just give you my feeling of what I've heard. The definitions I've heard is we're able to capture, different kinds of data, right? So if we had like file-based data or actual some sort of database and those kind of things, this service is kind of bringing those things together. Is that a good representation of what it is, or maybe you could?
You're spot on, actually. So essentially, data lake is a single repository that allows you to store data of any type and size, right? And it's cost effective and has no fixed limits on account or file size, and it provides massive throughput to increase analytical performance. So with this, customers, what we are saying with this recent integration that we announced between Azure Data Lake and Azure Data Factory, that you could use the Azure Data Lake connector in ADF and bring in data from various sources. Again, we support a bunch of cloud and on-premise sources to Azure Data Lake store to build that repository. And once you build that repository scales automatically as the data scales.
Yeah, and the other thing you mentioned earlier, I think it's probably a key feature when you start doing this kind of thing, is the USQL. And again, as the way I understand that, is that sort of a layer where you could run a query and it could hit all these different types of data and actually return you a result set? Is that what that's about?
Yes, so USQL is actually very powerful. So it allows you to express your target aggregations in SQL-like query syntax. And what we are saying with this feature that we announced last week is that you could go and create end-to-end big data Azure Data Factory pipelines that run these USQL scripts as a processing step on the Azure Data Lake analytical service. So that script could be doing weblog processing or any other processing step as part of this entire workflow, data workflow that you have created, where you are first ingesting the data to Data Lake store, then running a processing step, or you could be doing some other downstream operations before you have the data ready to be consumed by BI applications. So you can build this entire workflow, schedule it, orchestrate and operationalize it using Data Factory.
So I mean, that's neat to hear the way that we're integrating those, but I gotta ask. So we have Azure Table Storage, which is functionally unlimited. And then now we have Data Lake, which, again, the data structure is a little bit different, but like, what makes something big enough that you have to go to Data Lake versus the other locations we have for data?
So with Data Lake Store, it can be provisioned to do analytics on terabytes or even exabytes of data. So essentially what we are seeing right now are customers who, like big customers, enterprise customers, who are moving massive amounts of data, like terabytes of data, to Azure Data Lake so that they can use the parallel compute performance that it provides and then scale it as the data is scaling. So we are seeing that kind of usage with Data Lake today.
Okay. Okay.
And because the lake is kind of this central repository, is there like the same features like that we would have like in storage that we're used to? Like in blob storage, we had like geo redundancy and these kind of things. Is that even like needed when you do something like a data lake, or is there provisions for that, or is it more like, well, no, we would just go pull the source data again and bring it into the lake?
So there are provisions for that in the coming months. So this thing is right now in a limited public preview, and there will be provisions for that. And with this data lake store, you could actually define rules to say that this particular folder, only this particular person has access to, which you cannot do with blob storage or Azure table. So you can define ACLs even at that level.
Now, would that be like integrated into something like Azure AD? Is that the model?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask next about security and around, you know, that's the next thing that usually comes up, especially when you're saying, hey, I'm going to take all your enterprise data and do some analytics on it. It's kind of secret sauce, you know, so it's like, okay, how are we going to secure this thing? But
so this is entirely integrated with the Azure Active Directory, so it's entirely controlled by that.
Awesome. Cool. Well, this is good. I don't know, Evan, did you have any other questions for Gaurav? This has been great. I learned a lot here.
It's kind of starting to place this in kind of in the bigger map for me. I still think at some point I'm going to have to go play with this just to really truly understand it. But no, this is great, Gaurav. Thank you very much for coming on.
Great. Awesome. All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Thanks, Gaurav.
Thanks, everybody, for showing up.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.